Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello, this is TalkSport's Women's Football Show podcast. Every week, I'll be bringing you the best bits from our show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week, we're on Monday at 7pm. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday, and you can listen in full then. This week, former Liverpool assistant manager and London Bees head coach Luke Swindlehurst joins me live all the way from South Korea. Luke told me what it's been like running the PSG Academy in South Korea as the director of football and plenty more.
I really appreciate your invite to be on. I really enjoyed last week's show with Ash Hinks. Fantastic. It's late at night here, 11 plus hours, but it's not a problem to stay up late for your show.
Amazing. Thanks, Luke, for joining me. How is life in South Korea? Obviously, you've been over there for 2-3 years now. You're head of the Academy of PSG. You know, you were at Liverpool before. And all round, you know, Colin Bell's obviously over there, South Korean coach. Used to be Republic of Ireland manager, the women's manager. How much of an interaction have you had with him and what's life like in South Korea?
Yeah, great. I mean, funny enough, you say that, I actually spoke to Colin this morning. We speak really regular. We've been out for meals. He's been the island manager, so I've had plenty of dealings with him before. He's over in Uzbekistan at the moment with the under-20s. They've got an exciting game coming up against North Korea, so massive derby there, North Korea, South Korea in the under-20s Asia Games. But South Korea for me has been amazing, a really good experience to see different kinds of football. And in terms of my role with PSG, we have just under 100 players in our academy. That's from 6 years old all the way through to senior women. So yeah, it's an enjoyable experience. And it's good to see different styles of play and different philosophies and meet new people across the globe.
Yeah, and I selfishly want to see you back in the WSL or over in the NWSL in America, because I think you're a top coach. And whenever I speak to people, they often talk about how good your man management is and just how good you are all round as a person. So this leads me on to the fact that you're at Liverpool when you won the league. You know, your assistant manager, Matt Beard, I know he's one of your best friends. Talk to me a little bit about that experience, what it was that you created at Liverpool to make you win the league, because obviously I've won things myself and it's a feeling you get around the dressing room. But from a coaching perspective, what did that feel like throughout the season? Was there ever a moment where you're like, we've got this? And was it down to individual players? And just talk to me about that experience you had.
Yeah, it was a huge transition, really, because when I came in, I joined Matt and his remit after coming from Chelsea was to try and change the direction of Liverpool Football Club. They'd finished bottom of the league for the previous two seasons in the WSL. And what we wanted to do was try and transform the struggling team that we had. And what came with that first was obviously recruitment. So we set about looking and identifying the right kind of players which were going to come in and transform that team. And I think the catalyst really was getting Farrah Williams. She was the one that everybody looked at and said, wow, Liverpool really mean business once Farrah came through the door. And once we really got her, then that was when it was like dominoes falling and we decided that then we could bring in other players like Lucy Bronze and Gemma Bonner and Natasha Dowie came through the door. And then all of a sudden we found ourselves with a squad full of proven winners, internationals from all over the globe. So the starting point was really getting the recruitment right, characters, winners. And then once we had the recruitment, it was about building the right environment, getting the players into the right tactical, the right frame of mind mentally. And the way the WSL was back then with the summer season, it was across, you'd play seven games and then you'd have an international break and then another seven games. It was quite a short season back then. So it was really about getting the most out of those players in a short space of time, letting them go away, come back and then go again. And we just found momentum really quickly. The players clicked. They all were pretty much in housing. Apart from one or two, the rest were all in housing. All the foreign players lived in a house. There was a number of English players lived in a house. And that really helped them gel. And then we went from what was bottom of the league the year before to win it in the first season was just unbelievable.
It's absolutely amazing.
At the time, we didn't really expect to go and transition to being the winning team as quickly as we did, but the players just carried us through.
And talk to me about your role and responsibility within that team and how it differs from when you are an assistant coach, which you was at, you know, at Liverpool, and then obviously London Bees, you were the head coach. And I always find in my career, when I had an assistant, they were always your best mate. They always put their arm around you and they'd be that person that said, you know, if I was a manager, you'd be playing. Everyone loves their assistant. And then the responsibility obviously changes when you're a head coach. How did you find, you know, that transition of assistant to a head coach, and which role and responsibility do you prefer?
Well, you're right. It's a completely different role. And the role of an assistant is one that you have to be the one that supports the manager no matter what. You have to have the same kind of thinking. But you can also be the one who's maybe approachable for the players when they don't necessarily want to speak to the manager. And really to observe things when sometimes maybe players think the manager's not watching, you need to be his eyes and ears. No matter what the circumstances. And then sometimes you can get a feel for other things. And again, I have completely different characteristics and strengths to what Matt Beard has. And he knew that when he brings in his staff. And the key to having a successful coaching team is having people that are different, that see different things. And from a tactical and interchanging point of view in the training, I would look at certain aspects from maybe an attacking detail, and then Beardy would look at more of the defensive shape. So we'd all have our individual roles to play throughout the season. And what that does is it gives you a different dynamics. And sometimes you need different perspectives and ideas to bounce off. In terms of transitioning to being a manager, you take all of the things that you've learned from people that you've worked with, and then you try and adapt that to take all the best little pieces, all the best coaches, take the best things. And I have definitely taken things that I've worked with from Beardy. And then you try and adapt and use those things. But also you need to find your own identity and your own philosophy to make that work for you. And not everything that Matt would do are things that I would do as a manager and vice versa. Because at the end of the day, you have to be your own person or authentic to your own ideas and philosophies.
Yeah, and obviously you've been in the women's game for a long time. You were at Manchester City when they were in the Northern Prem, you know, before they got all the money, the glitz and the glamour. And, you know, what was that like kind of, and the lack of financial support then in comparison to what it's like now?
Such a change. I mean, that was getting on for 15 years ago now. So many, many years ago. And I remember, you know, we used to train at Platt Lane in the academy. And it was just maybe two seasons before the money started filtering in. I think Mark Hughes was the men's manager at the time. And, you know, we were, the WSL wasn't even invented. It wasn't even a thing at that particular point. We were in the old Women's National League North. Liverpool were in that league as well at the time, and the girls were training twice a week. It wasn't in the social media. There was no women's football show. There's such a big difference to you roll the clock on 15 years and now you see filling out stadiums, huge support for the Lionesses. The girls are household names. So massive, massive changes. And the girls were actually, you know, if anything, they were probably paying to play at that point.
And these are players you had, you know, like top players as well that were kind of twice a week training. We talk about it a lot on this show, and obviously you have seen it. You've seen that, like, there still needs to be more done, Luke, obviously with regards to a lot of attendances. You would have seen the games from at the weekend, and we talk about it a lot. But individual players that you've worked with, you mentioned Lucy Bronze, Farrah Williams. In your opinion, what is it that makes someone a good player into, you know, what's good from great? You know, what are your experiences of working with those types of players and the difference?
Well, the first thing is, I think, decision-making for players and quickness of those decisions in the decision-making and executing those decisions with quality and high quality. And then to the top players, I think the mental toughness and resilience married up with elite physical fitness. So you mentioned somebody like Lucy Bronze, and her elite physical fitness just stands out above most of the players. Farrah Williams, her technical quality stands out above all others. But you look back at those players and their journeys, and what they all did was huge sacrifices, huge mental toughness to be, you know, in that first year at Liverpool, we were training late in the evening at 7:30, even though they were full-time girls, we were having to wait for the academy boys to finish. And then we'd get on and training would finish at maybe 9:30, and then they'd have to drive home, eating late, and that takes a lot. That takes a lot. So I think the ones who do get to the top is a huge mental, physical sacrifice. But what comes with that in terms of the player itself is the decision making on the pitch, and the speed of that makes them stand out from other players.
Yeah, I was about to say, I played on teams where they've turned off the floodlights on us before because we were training late at night, and it's like the reality. And it wasn't even that long ago, because I think a lot of people, I sat on the show, a lot think I retired about 20 years ago, but it's only been 4 years. So, you know, something I want to talk about, Luke, my last question to you is, like, navigating being a male in the women's game, right? I think, is it quite difficult right now to kind of navigate where, because a lot of clubs do want female coaches. And I often say, you know, it's the best person for the job. That's how I feel. I've had male managers, female managers. And I think, you know, for me, it's the best person for the job. And I've had good experiences with both, and I've had bad experiences with both. What's it like being a male in a kind of, in the women's game at this moment in time for you?
Well, what I would say is, I think it's difficult no matter who you are, being a manager. At the top end of the game, there's only 24 clubs. So as an example, if all 24 clubs were a female coach, then you would look at it and say, well, there's only 24 women representing coaches in the women's game. 24 is not a high number. So, and then that is mixed between, there's a mix of males, females, some foreign managers. So the landscape is tough competition for people who want to be or have aspirations to be in and around the Super League or the Women's Championship. It is tough. There's some great coaches there. So for me personally, you know, I've been privileged enough to be in and around it, and I'm glad to be still involved in the women's game. And hopefully many years to come, I get other opportunities to be in the Super League or Women's Championship again. But as I said, it's tough for everybody who wants to make their way. And if you do get the opportunity, some people don't get many second chances. As managers come in, they get a chance. Sometimes you can only get 7 or 8 games. If those games don't go well, then you could be out the door. So it is a difficult landscape across football to maintain a long career. And that's why people like Emma Hayes, Matt Beard, they're the people to be looking up to, because they've got longevity.
There was a break in the WSL this weekend for the FA Cup quarterfinals, so Luke and I heard how the action all unfolded from Uma Gurav.
The Women's FA Cup hasn't delivered many shocks in recent years, but all that's changed after a thrilling weekend. Both Leicester and Tottenham have made it through to their first ever FA Cup semi-finals, but they've done so at the expense of two of the big guns. Man City were mere seconds away from knocking Spurs out, but it was captain Beth England to the rescue. She equalised in the 96th minute after a defensive mistake to send the game into extra time and eventually penalties. And then the job fell to another Spurs hero. Keeper Becky Spencer saved two of City's spot kicks, ultimately sending her side straight through. A hard week for City all around. They were knocked out the Conti Cup after a 1-0 defeat to Chelsea earlier in the week. Despite being on track for a treble just 4 days ago, Man City suddenly have just one trophy left in their sights. Meanwhile, Liverpool may have had the better of the possession in their quarterfinal against Leicester, but they just could not stop the Foxes from scoring twice. A brace from Jutta Rantala sends Leicester through, but it means Liverpool, despite being so impressive this season, are now out of contention for silverware. Man United sail through to the semis after putting four past Brighton. They'll be hoping to make it to a second consecutive FA Cup final. And defending champions Chelsea were flying high after setting up a Conti Cup final against Arsenal. But it was not the dominant performance we're used to seeing from Chelsea in their quarterfinal against Everton. In the end, it was American superstar Caterina Macario who saved the day again for them. Her second half goal won it for the Blues. She's now scored in both her first two appearances for the club. So it's Leicester, Tottenham, Man United and Chelsea who all take a step closer to Wembley. But in the end, only one can lift that FA Cup. And with only one former winner left in this tournament, we may yet be in for some huge shock results.
So you heard it there from Uma Gurab. Luke, I mean, I was at this game yesterday, Tottenham 1-1, and it went into extra time. And Pens, Beth England scored in like the 96th minute. And then Tottenham go on to win it on penalties. I mean, what did you make of that game? And I thought it was a massive shock because before the game, I said that if they were to score early, you know, obviously City scored in after 6 minutes, then I thought it was going to go on to be, you know, 5 or 6 nil. And that's no disrespect to Tottenham, but just the form that City have been in. What did you make of that game? And how impressed were you with Tottenham's mentality to get back into it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great result for Tottenham. Really good result. I think they dug in deep. And sometimes against a team like Man City, who have been in great form, Mary Fowler scores the first after 6 minutes. And you can, at times, fear the worst against a team like Tottenham when Man City have been flying high and confident. And the resilience that Tottenham showed, dug in deep, and they got the rewards in the end when you keep going and made it difficult for Man City. And I think Man City perhaps will be massively kicking themselves that they didn't kick on from a good early start. And what happens then is Tottenham gain confidence and they've got the rewards through Beth England at the end. And once it finally gets to penalties, again, I think Man City will be disappointed with Alex Greenwood and...
Chloe Kelly,
who missed the penalties. Normally you would put your house on both of them to score those penalties and they didn't. And then obviously two good saves as well. So, you know, I think Tottenham deserved it. When you get to penalties, you know, you deserve everything you get.
I was alongside Joe Shannon on commentary duty for that one. So let's hear exactly how it sounded.
Into the path of Fowler, edge of the box, low shot, deflected in, and Manchester City lead inside 5.5 minutes, and Mary Fowler gets a goal in the FA Cup again.
And what I'm seeing right now early on, it's almost like Tottenham is showing too much respect.
Keating's come a long way, and she's got in a mess. England will score. She does score right at the end of stoppage time.
We're 95 minutes in, 1 minute to go. You know, absolutely unbelievable, Joe. Unbelievable. I did not see that one coming at all.
That is the end of extra time. Here's the first penalty. Saved by Spencer. To her left-hand side. A poor penalty from Alex Greenwood. Here's Kelly with a smashing right-footed effort that is saved. What a stop by Spencer. James Turner right-footed. Down the middle, she scores. It's history for Tottenham Hotspur. Into the semi-finals of the Women's FA Cup for the first time ever.
We deserve to win the game. I think we had, you know, see, it just shows how far we've come as a group. From 1 to 90, we were excellent. And then obviously when extra time came, I still felt like the pressure was there from us and we were trying to create chances. And we were doing it playing our side of play and we can control it. There's not many times teams can say that they can control a game against City, and I felt like in large parts we did.
It's a frustrating one, but I have to be honest, I didn't really feel that we deserved it. I think, and I've never really said that about our group. Normally we've been similar, but we had a similar stage last season against Villa. I was saying similar things that night, that we probably didn't earn it enough.
We have a mindset where we take each stop and then we're going to go for Wembley, and we want to go to Wembley and we'll have this trophy, but just to celebrate today, and then we make sure we're going to be very prepared for the semi-final.
A good friend of the show, Becky Spencer, you know, she's been in and out of the team this season. Finally, I feel like she's got, you know, cemented her spot. I was so delighted to be at that game yesterday, Luke, and to see her save those two penalties. What did you make of her performance yesterday? And is it finally like that Becky's finally cemented a place down, you know, in the starting lineup for Tottenham?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from my point of view, I don't think Becky has got anything to prove. She's been around, you know, she's a 33, she's experienced, she knows the WSL, she's got many, many performances in the WSL. And I just think it, you know, she's took a chance. She's shown the manager, look, I'm here, I want to play. And fair play to her. Again, it shows some great resilience from her, and she's quality. No doubt about Becky Spencer whatsoever. And I think definitely now she'll be putting herself right in the mix for being back into the number one in the Tottenham team.
Yeah, it's always good to see good people winning. And I feel like with Becky, she was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I've known her since I was younger. And I feel like she's had to move around a lot, you know, and had to really earn her spot. So I was really delighted yesterday to see that, Luke. But not a great day at the office for City, not the best week. It's amazing what can change, you know, in the running for a treble. And then Bunny Shaw had to go off injured. How costly could that be, the fact that Bunny Shaw had to go off, you know, with their title hopes?
It's a massive blow. You know, she's their top scorer. She's forefront of everything that they do in attacking, gives them loads of running in behind, a physical side as well. She causes teams lots of problems, and it could definitely have an impact on City. They do have depth in the squad, so maybe they can recover from that. But I'm sure they'll be a little bit weaker without Bunny Shaw in team, most certainly.
Yeah, and obviously Gareth Taylor, I've been a bit, you know, critical of him since he's been their manager. I feel like they've underachieved, and I think this month obviously got manager of the month. What do you make of his journey and his time at Manchester City and kind of what he's done? Because I think it's taken them a little bit longer to get to this place that they're at. You know, regardless of the result yesterday, they're flying high at the top of the table, joining on points with Chelsea. But what do you make of his time at Manchester City?
Well, I think what's happened is they've gone through a bit of a rebuild process. And a lot of good players left Man City, and they didn't initially replace those players. And what's happened, they've given him time to steady the ship, make sure that they got the team settled down. And then now I think they're getting the rewards for waiting out and not pushing the panic button too early. I think he's a good coach. I think he knows the Man City philosophy and the way they want to play. And I think the players all respect him and play for him. So I've got no concerns about the way Gareth plays. I think when he's got his players fit, and he has the quality to match some of the other clubs, because I think when you look at Chelsea and Arsenal, mostly they've had an open checkbook when it comes to signing players, and I don't think he's quite had that. So now he's going toe to toe with those, and I think he's got the squad, and I think if he can make sure he keeps his quality players like Hemp and Kelly and Greenwood all fit, then I think they'll have no problem.
Yeah, and our next game we're going to dissect, Luke, is going to be Everton 0, Chelsea 1. Caterina Macari on the score sheet again for Chelsea. Jess Peters spoke to the Chelsea forward about their win and what it's been like returning from injury after being out for so long.
Yeah, honestly, it's been the hardest period of my life. It's been nearly 2 years. But yeah, I'm just, you know, like super grateful that Chelsea never gave up on me and that they even wanted me, you know, even I joined, you know, being injured, which no one ever wants to do that. So I'm very thankful for Emma, Paul Green, you know, just Denise to like really just like have that faith in me. But yeah, I'm just so blessed to be in this team because they really are special and they've made my time go by so fast, even during the toughest months. So yeah, now I just hope that I can repay them by, you know, just keeping contributing to the team.
Now, Luke, it's obviously been a dream return for her, hasn't it? I've had my fair share of injuries. I know you've worked with a lot of players that have. What do you make of her return, being out for nearly 2 years?
Unbelievable. I mean, I think it was 20 months, wasn't it? She was out with an ACL and she's come back and she looks strong. She looks quick. She looks jumping at the bit and a genuine goal threat. Usually, after such a long run out, you can take maybe a few months to get up to speed, but she just seems to be desperate to get on the end of everything, running around, causing all kinds of problems, looking sharp. So that'll be a huge boost for Chelsea going forward.
Yeah, and Everton, they were impressive. They were difficult to break down. But what do you make of Everton? Because we talk about it on the show a lot with regards to those types of teams kind of always being okay within the WSL, but never really being able to push. We talk about budgets, but what do you make of them this season?
Yeah, Everton, again, they're in that cluster of teams that will always find it difficult to push beyond that unless they get that financial budget higher. Again, they've chopped and changed with players. You're never 100% sure what you're going to get with them. I was impressed with the way they dug in against Chelsea, and I think Emma Hayes said herself that they were relieved that they got over the line against them. So that shows some glimmer that Everton can go toe-to-toe with them, but it's that consistency that you want to see week in, week out. And also having a genuine goal threat, who's somebody who's going to score goals for them and high-value goals, getting into the high teens, that could then really push Everton up. So, again, I can't see them pushing out of that middle cluster until they get some real quality up top.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The next game, Luke, we're going to look back on is Manchester United 4, Brighton 0. I mean, I think everybody kind of expected Manchester United to win that one, but were you impressed with what? Because a lot of, you're a manager, so I want to hear about what you have to say about Mark Skinner as well. So there's been a lot of, like, talk about Manchester United this year and underachieving. What do you make of their season so far?
Yeah, well, I think Man United are pretty much where you would expect them to be. I don't think anybody with any realism would say that they could overtake Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City with the spending power that those guys have had, matched in with the fact that he's lost key players over time. He lost Alicia Russo. There's been talk of Mary Earps leaving the club, which potentially has unsettled people. They lost Ana Batil at right back. The year before, they lost the Dutch centre midfielder. And they've never really replaced those players with a similar quality.
Yeah, Jackie Groenen.
In that category of just below. And I think that's where they should be. I think Mark has had a bit of a raw deal from the Man United fans. When you look at the recruitment from the outside hasn't been perfect and they haven't got the deals over the line. And the person that takes the brunt of that is the manager for the results. So I think it's been a little bit unfair on him because they're pretty much where you would expect them to be for the squad that they have.
Yeah, and I think personally, you know, I understand the fans will always have that type of emotional feeling, you know. But I do think when you're right, Luke, when you talk about the players that he's lost and you look at, I think because they made the FA Cup final last year, you know, people were talking about the progression. And then when you lose those types of players, it's always going to be difficult. But the next, you know, the team they came up against, Brighton, are they in a tough spot at the moment? Obviously, a lot of people have spoken about the timing of letting Melissa Phillips go. What do you make of Mikey Harris as an interim? And do you think that they'll have that kind of... Do you think they have had the benefit of a bounce back, you know, from when you get a new manager, everybody kind of has that vibrant feeling. The players seem to play out of their skin, but you kind of feel like they're in a weird spot right now, Brighton.
Yeah, it looks like they've lost their way a little bit. I mean, I watched Maggie Harris's first interview when he came in, and for me, it was refreshing. I like the look of him. He's very much in that Brighton mould. He obviously knows the club and the club trusts him from the men's side of it. But what I do think is this result may be symptomatic of perhaps him coming over from the men's side and trying to play the Brighton way like the men play. And if you open yourself up too much against one of the top teams in this tier, you can get exposed. And I think that's what happened this week. The gaps were too big. The transition back to defence wasn't quick enough. And Manchester United really punished Brighton for those gaps, and Brighton just never got to grips with it. So I think a little bit worrying times for Brighton, but I don't think there'll be any danger of going down. But they really do need to get a grip of what is next, where they're pushing to. Because again, they could be in that bracket of similar to Everton, where they just stay in that cluster. And if they want to really push on, then I think they really need a clear plan now for the next 2-3 seasons and how to push into that top four bracket.
Yeah, and our next game we're going to talk about is your former side, one of your best friends, Matt Beard, Liverpool losing to Leicester. I mean, I think that was pretty much a big shot. What did you make of that? I mean, Leicester made history by reaching their first ever FA Cup semi-final. Rantala with the two unbelievable strikes. I think she's been brilliant this year. But do you think drawing Tottenham Hotspur would be their best chance of making the final now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a great result for Leicester and it was one that surprised me. I had Liverpool down to win that one before the game. I think most people would have thought Liverpool were in fairly decent league form, performing, and I think they will kick themselves. Also, Leicester with a bit of an unsettled week. Willie Kirk was absent on the touchline. So I would have expected a Liverpool win, but as it happens, sometimes that can galvanise players when your manager's not there and they say, look, this is up to us now. And they've obviously gone out there and put in a performance. So fair play to them. Rantala, I really like the look of her coming in off the right-hand side, the Finnish international. She is a genuine goal threat. She scores goals for her country. So she's somebody who Leicester can really rely on going forward to chip in with those goals. In terms of Beardy, I think, again, he'll be really disappointed and kicking themselves that they've not been able to push through that game and get themselves into a semi-final. It's disappointing day at the office for them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you think. Have you spoken to him, what his reaction was? Because I played for Beardy and I love playing for him. I think he's a top manager, top guy, wears his heart on his sleeve a little bit like myself. What do you think he'll be feeling today? Because it feels like a massive opportunity missed, doesn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think if that was the draw beforehand, he'd have been saying, oh, we'd take that and looking forward to gaining 3 points. I think he'd have been confident. I think one of the things that he struggled with this year is sometimes being able to get goals up top. They've always very organised, always very difficult to beat, but they do create a lot of chances. But sometimes on certain days, they fail to get it in the back of the net. And I think that's probably what's happened this weekend.
Yeah, now I just want to talk a little bit about the Conte Cup. You know, the semi-finals last week, Chelsea beating City, Arsenal beating Villa. How do you see the final playing out now? We've got Arsenal versus Chelsea in that one.
I know that it's such a tough game. The big, big games, big, big squads. It's hard. It's always hard to call the very close games, very close games. I like the look of Arsenal. I really like the look of them. I see how Blaksinius put 3 goals in against Aston Villa. Russo is finding the back of the net. Beth Mead, with her assists, she's up to 40 assists in the WSL. So I do like the look of Arsenal. But
so you're back in Arsenal for that one?
Yeah, but you can never rule out Chelsea. But I do. I'm back in Arsenal for that one.
Okay. Well, TalkSport's very own Bradley Hayden sat down with England and Arsenal's Beth Mead before the outstanding 4-0 Conte Cup victory over Aston Villa. He asked her in particular what it's been like playing with her teammate, Alessia Russo.
Yeah, Alessia's great. She's a goal scorer. She works really hard for the team. I've obviously had the pleasure of playing with her for a few more years at England, and I was excited to do it for club and country now. And we're starting to get, linking up and getting on the same wavelength and stuff like that. And hopefully we can continue to do that and become more dangerous.
And from your perspective, what is she like to play with? How does she impact your game and affect the way that you play?
Yeah, I mean, Les has got a lot of different attributes. You know, she can hold the ball up and I can come under and help her within the play. She can bring me into the game. I can bring her into the game. She knows my qualities, I know hers, and hopefully we can keep getting the best out of each other.
And the fact that you just said you want to keep getting the best out of each other, I think that's going to send quite a few shockwaves through WSL defences and fullbacks. The fact that we might not have seen you and Alessia and Caitlin Ford at their best as part of an Arsenal front three at the minute.
No, and I think we'd love to be perfect. It's not quite been perfect yet, but we are building. Hopefully we can keep improving together and getting them relationships better. And yeah, hopefully that it can cause more havoc for defenders in the coming season still.
And this feels like a team that has got great momentum at the minute, both on and off the pitch. Another sellout against Tottenham. Does it feel like you guys are trendsetters at the minute? And are you embracing the fact that everyone is looking at you guys and thinking and wishing they could get to that sort of stage in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're setting the bar high and we're pushing for the game to get to the next level. And of course, we want everybody else to kind of join us and do that. It's only going to benefit the women's game more. And the fans have been incredible for a long time at Arsenal. But obviously, we're seeing big, big turnouts at the Emirates each week. You know, two sellouts in a row, amazing atmospheres, you know, gets us through games. Obviously, this weekend was really important for us. The last 15 minutes probably were tired a little bit and the crowd got us through. So it's been really important and the club have been amazing in pushing that forward. So, yeah, hopefully the other clubs can follow suit.
How much are you guys pushing to play more at the Emirates and for that to maybe be your home at some point in the future and where all of your home games are played?
I mean, we would love that. Obviously, we want to make it our fortress as well, our home. The Arsenal home, and we love playing there. We love playing in front of the crowds. I think the fans love coming to the games and being a part of such a historic and amazing stadium. And yeah, of course, us as players want to push that for week in, week out. And as amazing as Boreham Wood's been over the years, you know, you can't get many fans there anymore for the fans that want to come. So yeah, it'd be great if we could make that our home permanently.
I mean, it's the stats at the minute are crazy. 31,000 is, or over 31,000 is the average that you guys are getting at home this season. That's more than most Premier League teams and most teams in the men's game as well. That must be incredible for you guys.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think, yeah, I've seen the stat about better than 9 Premier League teams, which we can't be complaining when we've got that many people who are excited to come see us and watch us play. And yeah, again, just setting boundaries and we've got to keep pushing them now.
And last one, I've just got to ask you about the draw for the Euros or to qualify for the Euros, which has just been announced. Mm-hmm. What are you making of with the group that England have got?
I mean, we were expecting it a little bit. We spoke about it last camp, but yeah, it's a pretty tough group. Obviously, you've got France, Sweden and Republic of Ireland. Katie is very happy about playing England. I think it's the first time in history we're going to get a chance to play each other, so yeah, it's a tough group, but it's why you play football, to play the best.
That's great, and hopefully you can keep Kate McCabe quiet when we play.
We'll do our best. I'm not looking forward to being an opponent, I'll give you that.
So Luke, I just want to talk a little bit about the US Women's National Team. You know, last night they beat Brazil in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Lindsay Horan scored an amazing goal. Now, you're a coach, you touched upon Emma Hayes, and we talk about it a lot on this show about her becoming the USA coach. What do you think that Emma Hayes will bring to this American team? Because we know they're natural born winners of late, you know, haven't been great, and the expectation is there. What do you think Emma Hayes will bring to this USA team that doesn't exist already?
Well, I think she'll bring belief, confidence. I think she'll drive the standards 100%. I think Emma knows exactly what she wants. So there'll be a very clear vision for what USA team want moving forward. And no, USA in the past have always been proven winners. And I think the number one goal will be to win everything. I think that's what she'll be looking to achieve. They'll be setting out to every single team they play. They'll be looking for a comprehensive win and have that winning mentality. So I don't expect anything less. Obviously, I think there'll be a huge transition period for them with a new manager, all types of players getting opportunities. But I think quite quickly that will settle down and she'll be looking to really push on and try and take over the international scene.
And Luke, obviously the Lionesses had their Euro 2025 qualifier draw last week and, you know, Sweden, France, Republic of Ireland. I actually cannot believe that this is our group. How difficult is this going to be for England? I mean, they can definitely get out of it, but it's crazy that these are qualifiers and these are like group of deaths that would be in a tournament.
Yeah, hugely, hugely difficult. I mean, you could not pick a top two from that group. I mean, even, you know, Ireland will be a hugely difficult group game. Sweden, tough, the quality that they've got. And then France with their pace and technical ability. England really are going to have to be at the top of their game to get out of that group, which will really, it will test the squad. It will definitely test the squad, but such exciting for fans. And if they do come through that group, then they should go on really and be one of the favourites to go on and win things.
This week, we were joined here at TalkSport by Vice President of West Ham Women, Queenie Poulter, and we had a chat about all things she's been doing behind the scenes at West Ham.
So I think about a few years ago, Jack Sullivan, who was the MD of West Ham Women's at the time, had the BBC Three documentary out. I just happened to watch it. Have a great relationship with West Ham because being an MD of a local company and then being like the kind of local football team, we got chatting about how can we take the women's game to the next level after the Lionesses had done so well recently at the National Cup. So we spoke about what we could do specifically for the women's team, and what I was so impressed by was that they were looking for a commercial deal just for the women's team. And having recently... just on a commercial deal with Man United and doing both the women's and men's, I really want to take the opportunity to give the women the time and really concentrate on it. So that's the kind of background of how we got involved.
And what's your role within that now? So you're Vice President of the Women's Team. What does your day-to-day look like? You're having much interaction with Karen Brady. Like, how does it work?
So it's about being an individual that's an ambassador for the club, from a commercial standpoint, also helping out the players, see if they need anything, you know, behind the scenes. I think there's so much around what women need on the pitch. What about not on the pitch? Women have a very different kind of monthly cycle, let's say, to men. And, you know, what can we do to really help them out? There's a really topical thing at the moment about ACL issues. So in the background, trying to look at how we can help women with that, recovery, protein intake, and even commercial deals outside of just the club. There's so many, you know, male footballers out there that have a lot of commercial deals which are their own and nothing to do with the club, where a lot of women, it's all tied into the club. So also, what can I do to help them with commercial deals off the pitch also?
Yeah, and obviously, West Ham right now, you know, affiliation with the men and that type of stuff. But how do you think the bridge can be closed between the Arsenals, the Chelseas, the Cities, between West Ham? Because right now, sitting, you know, second from bottom in the WSL, I actually trained at West Ham when I was injured a couple of years ago. And, like, I loved it there. When I went down to the training ground, I had a good vibe. So, you know, what can people like yourself do to kind of help bridge those gaps? Obviously, money does talk within the women's
Absolutely.
Game. But what do you think it is you can bring to this new situation you're in?
I think there's a couple of things. I think that the ground and the training ground just had a regeneration. So I think that naturally, you know, brings so much morale to a team, doesn't it? You know, as a player, it really, really does. Is also, you know, talking about longer term strategies with the club and with the girls and getting them to understand what was our long term vision. And I think someone like me that comes from a business commercial standpoint, I can help a bit more of that day to day. Maybe that's someone like Karen doesn't have time to do. So I think it's about getting them all on board with the vision. And I think morale is a massive thing with helping with results, right? And helping with performance. So I think it's getting them on board and then getting them to understand the vision.
Yeah, and I think one thing I really liked recently, I saw Dagny, there was a documentary about her, and obviously we talk a lot on this show, you touched upon it, ACLs, menstrual cycle, those types of things. Sometimes a taboo subject, people that are, you know, pregnant, having a baby. When I played, people had to retire.
Yep.
But I love what you guys are doing because I've seen a lot of Katrina Gorey and her little girl, Harper,
so
you know,
true.
At the games, and I think it's important, and I think you guys are really setting a standard for that, because at times we often see the negative stories about people not being supported within the women's game, and I love what you guys are doing, and I think a lot of people can probably learn from that. Did that documentary come about because of you, and how did it come about?
So when we initially decided to pair up the women's game, we really want to look at doing something that people are not talking about, and we really want to be trailblazers in maybe talking about those taboo things. And there's no brand that I can currently see, particularly in the hydration space, that has been brave enough to just endorse women and just endorse the women's game, and also be happy to be, you know, the poster brand for a taboo subject like coming back from maternity. Because let's be honest, in the UK, it's a wider issue, not just in football. It's even more taboo in football because it's a male-dominated sport, unfortunately. So I really wanted to make sure that we set the standard, because I really hope the brands copy us. If the more brands copy us, the more we can do to help. And, you know, money does talk, like you said. And if we can put money into, you know, allowing the women's football clubs to talk about these sort of issues, we can help the younger generation, and we can, you know, make the WSL, you know, the league it needs to be.
Yeah, obviously you're the expert in this line of, and I was saying before, like, I work in America a lot, and the US Women's National Team sell out every stadium they're at, similar to what the Lionesses are doing. How do you think we can get that to filter down to the league? Because obviously at the Emirates last week, Arsenal, Tottenham sold out. Arsenal seem to be able to do it, and I played for that club for 12 years, so I know exactly, it's been a process.
Yeah.
It's not just been overnight, but like, Are we kind of having the situation where we might end up just having everybody go to what's in England Lionesses, but not really go into the WSL? That's kind of a concern of mine.
100%. But I think it's about us all being brave enough to admit the women's game, men's game is different. Let's not merge them. They both are there for totally different reasons. It's one's played by males, is played by females. So let's treat that audience to what they're looking for. So let's make it more immersive. Just going back to America, are so good at making it an experience. Look what they do in basketball. you know, as
Super
audience,
Bowl, everything, Super Bowl. Yeah.
So to make the women's game different to the male game, we should make it more immersive, you know, more things interactive for when, you know, families do go, things happening outside the ground. So I think we need to all be brave enough to just treat it as a different thing and take a leaf out of the Americans' book and make it more immersive and make it more fun for families to attend. Then I think the WSL stands on its own and it doesn't keep getting compared to the Premier League. Then brands like myself will want to just endorse the women's team and give it the attention that it deserves and understand it's very different to when you're, you know, in a commercial partnership with a male club.
Yeah, and obviously I want a little bit of inside information here to a certain degree. West Ham women, you know, what are the realistic goals of the club? Obviously sitting second from bottom isn't where the club would want to be. They're going to be okay this year. I think Bristol City, you know, haven't had a great season. But long-term wise, like, what are your visions for the club? Because obviously you brought in some good players, Christy Mewis, Yelena Zadorski, yep, Katrina Gori, so doing everything to stay within the WSL. But I think going forward, give us a little bit of background on the kind of stuff you're looking to do.
So it's more off pitch, if I'm honest. It's more about ensuring that the girls have got the support that they need, from going back to the ACL issue, going back to all the support from a maternity point of view, from ensuring that if they need certain time off for family things, and ensuring we're the family club. So you can bring your children to games. You know, we're going to have a nursery there for children to be able to, you know, be looked after while the girls are training. So we can attract then the best top female players to the club because we're going to have the best kind of aftercare and off pitch care. I think also being the trailblazers in what we're doing with, you know, tapping into that family audience, I think we're going to attract bigger sponsors. So it's going to give us the funding we need to be able to, you know, sign the top names to ensure that, you know, next year we're at the top of the league like the men are.
And your other passion is Wow Hydrate. And obviously, yes, I work as an ambassador with you guys as well. And something that really drew me into Wow was the Project Marta, you know, and it's about finding players that haven't necessarily been found. You know, between certain ages, because I think sometimes in the men's and women's games, if you're, you know, 17, 18, you think, oh, you know, I'm past that point. So tell us a little bit about Project Marta, where people can watch it the first season. Is there going to be a second season as well?
So Project Marta was on our YouTube channel and it was about taking great prospect female players that haven't been signed by, you know, the WSL or the league below and giving them the opportunity to be trialled and have, you know, the top WSL coaches look upon them. The winner, Izzy, and we've just endorsed for her to go to America. Like you said, America is a great place for female football. So she's just gone there. We've introduced her to West Ham and she's now currently training with them as well. So there's going to be a season two, which West Ham are going to be fully involved in. And it's about ensuring that we're getting the youth through and having that scouting programme available so girls can carry on being inspired if they haven't got, you know, the access to a club. So I'm really excited. You're going to be hopefully be a massive part of it. And let's see what's to come.
Last week was International Women's Day. So myself, Shabana Hearn, Natalie Sawyer and Faye Carruthers reflected on our journeys and the work being done so many wonderful women can be working in football.
I have been in love with football for quite some time.
Football is for everyone. It binds us, unites us, allows us to share in the beauty of the sport. And we all have that one moment, that split second when our love of the game was captured. For TalkSport's Shabana Hearn, it happened while watching her sister, the future Ireland international Rosha Littlejohn, play and succeed on the pitch.
She was a girl amongst women and it was her first, you know, taking part in women's football. Before then it was playing with the boys. So I remember then thinking, oh, this is pretty incredible.
For our very own Weekend Sports Breakfast presenter, Natalie Sawyer, the memory of her first ever match in a Brentford stadium has stayed with her to this day.
I can still picture exactly where I am in the stand and I can see the haze of the floodlights, the sort of autumnal evening as it with the sunset. That was it. After that, we all became hooked.
And for our Lioness legend, Leanne Sanderson, who would go on to gain 50 England caps, her football love story began very early on.
Even when I was in my mum's stomach, it sounds funny, but I was going to my dad's games. And then as soon as I could walk, I was kicking a football. I thought my dream was to be a professional footballer, but doing what I do now, I probably love it even more if that's even possible.
Today, we celebrate our women in sport.
For me, International Women's Day is about representation. It's about showing that we're here, we exist, we deserve to be here.
There have been difficulties.
People who doubt people who are women to work in sport or be sports people blows my mind.
But as TalkSport's England correspondent Faye Carruthers knows, the future is bright indeed.
Now you have organisations like Women in Football that support women who want to work in the football industry and don't really know where to start.
We've come such a long way and we'll continue to keep striving and, you know, I'm not going anywhere and I say that all the time.
And to the young girls out there who dream of working in football, our presenters have a special message for you.
Never let anybody stop you from achieving your dreams and just keep going no matter how hard it gets.
There's obstacles to everything you do, you just got to climb over them.
I'm now glad I've had all the knocks along the way, like really glad of it, because I think it's made me more resilient.
Parents come up to me and say, my daughter wants to be like you, and she sees you, and it's good to have that visibility.
There are just lots of incredible roles that women can get involved in. And I think that's what International Women's Day should be about, flagging up what great industry we have and what opportunities there are for women.
The women can keep doing the talking on the pitch, the game can keep growing the way it's going, and women, broadcasters and sport will continue to get opportunities and flourish because that's the world heading in the right direction. Diversity matters.
To all the women in sport all around the world, thank you. Thank you for continuing to make the industry just that much better.
So just remember that we deserve to be here just as much as anybody else.
That's all for this week. Thanks so much for listening. For next week's show, I'll be exclusively in Kansas City for their home opener versus the Portland Thorns. I'll be bringing you exclusive interviews from the only women's football-specific stadium in the world. We'll also round up the return of the WSL, including those huge top-of-the-table clashes between Chelsea and Arsenal.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.